This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The new coronavirus has yet to make a confirmed appearance in Michigan. We've said this before, your more immediate health risk is probably the flu. And yet the CDC has warned the public to prepare for a coronavirus outbreak. We were wondering what exactly that means. Dr. Janae Khaldoun has agreed to come help explain. She's the state's chief deputy director for health and chief medical executive. Dr. Khaldoun, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
What does it mean to prepare for the coronavirus? I mean, what does that look like for a state? Is it different than being ready for flu season?
So you're right. So a lot of the things that we would normally do to prepare for the flu is the same things that we're doing to prepare for the coronavirus. As you mentioned, we have not had any confirmed cases in the state of Michigan so far, but there's still a concern. There have been over 81,000 cases across the globe, primarily in China, and there have been also 14 travel-related cases in the United States. So what we're saying is we need to do everything we can to be prepared, and that's what we're doing with our public health system response.
But does that mean, in terms of the state, considering that there's no vaccine and that the treatment of coronavirus is sort of an evolving concept, what does it mean in terms of, you know, the state's health resources, for example?
So what we've been doing is actually working with our local public health departments and our health systems to make sure they're prepared. You're right, there is no vaccine, there's currently no treatment. So what we're moving towards is something called community mitigation. And it's a tool, basically, that public health uses regularly. For example, if there's a response to a chickenpox outbreak in a school, or if a hospital implements visitor restrictions during flu season, which many have already this year. Those are the types of things that we will be working on. So making sure we are ready if coronavirus does come to the state to do things like make sure we may need to close a school if a case comes through a school. We want to make sure everyone knows proper hygiene practices, such as washing their hands and sneezing into their sleeve and staying home if they're sick. Those are the types of efforts that we have been preparing for several weeks.
Is risk necessarily limited to places in Michigan that have large workplaces or large schools and school districts?
No, this is not limited. I think there's a role everyone can play, absolutely, in public health and being prepared. And again, these simple things I'm talking about, washing hands, not coming to work if you're sick, those are things everyone can do to be prepared, not only for the coronavirus, but also for flu, cold, and other viruses that we would normally see across the United States.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what large institutions should be doing to prepare outside of the, sort of the formal medical system?
Yeah, so everyone should be looking at their human resource policies, updating them, including if people will be allowed to work from home and what that will look like, making sure everyone, again, knows, stay home if you are sick, make sure you wash your hands. Everyone should be making sure they're appropriately cleaning their common areas, so their lounges and their bathrooms. Again, these are really things from a public health perspective that organizations should be doing anyway, but this is the perfect time to dust those off, to make sure they're updated, and to make sure all of your employees are ready and prepared and know what to do.
It's funny. I think we don't often talk about custodial things, but, you know, in terms of public places, that does sound key. How far is the state prepared to go into this unknown field of preparation? I mean, in China, which is admittedly a very different situation, they're actually building new hospitals to deal with this. How far should the state go? How much of an investment is appropriate, do you think, at this time?
I mean, we will do whatever it takes, really, to slow the spread. And let me be very clear. The goal, if this becomes something that comes to Michigan, it will not be to 100% stop the spread, but it will be to slow the spread as much as possible. And so we'll be working with our local partners to make sure we're doing everything we can to do that. So that may include working with local school districts if and when they may need to close, working with our medical providers. So we will do whatever it takes. And like we always do in public health, we will pivot as necessary to protect the public's health.
Who is going to be in charge of containment When we're talking about tracking down interactions with infected people, is that something that happens at the county level, or is the state in charge of that?
So we've actually already, for several weeks now, actually been working with our local health departments. So people who are coming with recent travel to mainland China, they are already, you know, going to their homes, coming through the Detroit Metro Airport, and we get their names and we send them to the local health departments for what we call self-quarantine or monitoring at home with the support of the local health department. So that is already happening. And will continue to happen. We are not currently quarantining anyone in a separate facility outside of their home. And again, we will pivot if this comes to the state of Michigan. But right now, we are not planning any mass quarantine situations. And again, it will become more of what we do in response to the flu. And like I said, chickenpox and measles and other things. Again, this is bread and butter public health. We have many experts in our state and our local health departments who have responded to other outbreaks in the past. And so we are ready and prepared to pivot as we need to address coronavirus if it comes to the state of Michigan.
I heard somebody at the CDC say it's not as if there isn't a playbook for such things. The CDC also said, though, to prepare for massive disruption of daily life. What does that look like in Michigan?
I'm not sure if there will be a massive disruption. Again, it could be just like if we have an outbreak of flu at a school. Yes, it may be that there are some places where employees are not coming to work, and so perhaps that particular business may decide to close. There may be times where we have a cluster at a school, and then that school may need to close. But again, these are things that the public health system does anyway. It's often in the background and people don't hear about it. But these are tools that we have in our toolbox and we use on a regular basis, and we are prepared to use them if COVID-19 comes to Michigan.
Dr. Khaldun, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it very much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Michigan's Chief Medical Executive, Dr. Janae Khaldun. There's plenty to think about when you start considering all the interactions you have with others every day, every point of contact. With us now for a bit more information is Dr. Preethi Malani. Her field is infectious diseases, and she is the chief health officer at the University of Michigan. Dr. Malani, welcome.
Thank you.
I confess, I keep walking around in public places wondering, possibly obsessively, if people have washed their hands. Am I on the right track?
You are. You are. And hand washing is probably the most fundamental thing we can do to prevent all infections.
There are a number of public places where you can see people wearing masks already. I was at DTW the other day, and I saw people both coming and going wearing them. Is that something you recommend?
So the issues around the masks, they are not recommended for general use in terms of infection prevention. They do have a particular role within the health setting. But in fact, right now, there are some shortages on masks, so the recommendation is not to just wear them out and about.
Who do you consider most at risk right now within the field of your job? Are you thinking about students or patients or staff?
So we're talking about in context of coronavirus and not seasonal flu, which is also very active right now. And so far, we are still thinking, at least in the United States, travel is a big risk factor, and it had been travel really to China, and then Korea got added, Japan, cruise ships, and now potentially other parts of Europe, Italy, Iran. So it is becoming much more of a worldwide phenomena. But at this point, travel or exposure to somebody who may have been infected or exposed.
There's nothing quite like having a coughing fit in the midst of an interview about infectious disease. I hope you will pardon me. You have an entire community that you look after, you know, a whole university and one of the larger ones. How do you begin to craft a plan to think about protecting tens of thousands of people against something that is still largely an unknown commodity?
Yeah, so when we think about the university, we do think about various groups. So a lot of people think about the students, but we also have a very large staff and, of course, our faculty. In fact, we're the largest employer in the state. So it's a lot of people, and they're in a lot of places beyond central campus. When we think about preparing for coronavirus or really any other infectious threat or really any other disruption, we sort of break things down a bit. The health system has its own set of issues that they have to deal with in terms of preparing, and a lot of that work is built upon work that's been done for years around Ebola and SARS and H1N1. And there are a number of really important discussions happening at the health system. More particular to campus, it's the University Health Service, which of course is the front line for a lot of students who may be coming from places where they might have been exposed. So really thinking carefully about screening protocols, asking travel histories, and just making sure that we're really in close touch with our public health colleagues. So some of that is done. When we think at a broader level, there's also a lot of operations at the university. And so when we think about disruptions, and last year there were a couple weather days. If you remember, it was very cold, and so the university closed down. But that doesn't mean you don't have to feed people and house people and keep the lights going and taking care of animals. So thinking about continuity of operations is a big aspect of this, and it's an opportunity to really think deeply about what are the essential things of each unit, what would happen if you had to cut back on things, what are the plans? Like what's essential, what's not essential, and what would you do in a setting where things might be disrupted? So we've asked people to really take a good look at their continuity plans, and this isn't something that we have thought about in the last 2 weeks. It's been an ongoing process to really get people to get these written plans and to talk about continuity.
It sounds a lot like some of the public health disaster planning that you see in states that, you know, are at risk of earthquake or seismic activity or tornado seasons.
Absolutely. And I've shared with some of my colleagues that it's a little hard to predict what's going to happen in terms of coronavirus and is it going to come here and in what fashion and when. But it is probably the best example we have is weather-related disruption. And sometimes that's a little bit predictable with a hurricane, but sometimes it's not, like with a tornado. And Michigan, fortunately, is a little bit, we're a little bit protected from those major weather disasters. So this could be new territory for some.
At what point would you say the meetings and conversations about coronavirus really picked up speed?
So I would say probably in mid-January, we started thinking about it a bit. And really one of the first things we did, not so much because we had a concern for infection immediately happening on our campus, was because we're a global university and we have a lot of students, faculty, and even staff that are all over the world, is really taking a look at who is in China, what's their status, are they okay, should we help them get home, and then I think also looking ahead to future travel. So there have been a number of programs that got delayed, postponed, rescheduled, moved somewhere else, and at this point it's just an unknown, even looking into the fall. So thinking about enrollment and how things might get impacted.
I saw today travel to South Korea is the latest aspect of that to be adjusted, that
yes.
There won't be any travel to South Korea for university personnel for the foreseeable future.
That's correct.
How much about this is communication for you? I mean, there's communication with staff and faculty, but there's also the student body, the population that might not always be clued into what the administration's talking about.
Yeah, and I think we try to use a lot of different approaches to communication, and there's sort of the old-fashioned newspaper and radio and other things, but the students communicate in really different ways, and they communicate sometimes in very informal ways. So making sure that there's good information in the places that they are and not forgetting what the day-to-day issues are around seasonal flu, because you have people in close contact. And I think trying to be a voice of reason, but also saying, listen, make sure that if you're traveling, for example, spring break is around the corner, and thinking ahead about having a plan in case you get stuck, thinking ahead, just being smart, paying attention.
Boy, you're not kidding when you talk about spread of information. I have a school-age kid at home, lower elementary, and I was very shocked to learn that this is a topic on the playground. Kids talking with not the best information at their disposal about methods of transmission. Is that a concern among the rest of us as well?
It is. And I think, again, if you rely only on social media for information, it can be questionable in terms of accuracy because there's a lot of conspiracy theories and other issues around this. And to be honest, there are a lot of unknowns, including whether the spreads from people who are asymptomatic. That's not quite clear. Does it spread in other ways other than respiratory routes?
Michigan's home to world-class medical facilities, like the University Hospital. What can these hospitals do to limit risk of new contagion?
Well, within the hospital, there are a number of policies. I think first thing is just identifying someone who might be at risk and quickly putting them in a place where they would be safe. and making sure that our healthcare workers have good awareness and personal protective equipment and really good knowledge on how to use it and how to use it properly and making sure they have adequate access.
Is there a clear decision-making process for whether the university should consider closing certain facilities or maybe even an entire campus?
Well, there are policies in place, and those are discussions that would be had at a very high level and really weighing pros and cons. And in this case, in terms of infection issues, being hand-in-hand with our public health colleagues.
What else is on your mind just as you think about your own mindfulness about this and staying healthy?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a time to really, like, think about being well and not worrying so much about something to the point where you're not able to function well. Again, I think there are a couple of really important lessons. One is register your travel. We find that a lot of people who are traveling on university business are not taking that small step to register their travel. Having a good plan for any kind of disruption at home, too.
U of M Chief Health Officer Dr. Preeti Malani, thank you so much for taking some time to stop in.
Thank you.